Today, I'm joined by Matt Verlach, founder and CEO of Precision, an AI-powered dashboard that brings clarity to the chaos of your data and helps you find bottlenecks to unlock growth. Today, we're talking about what separates successful tech adoption from software buyer's remorse. Matt joins me here at Precision HQ to share what he's learned as both an operator and an advisor. Matt, thanks for joining me today.
Dude, I'm so happy to be here. Welcome to HQ, man. Having some fun.
I'm asking you. Thank you for joining me. I'm actually joining you. It's well, kind of meta how this is working out.
It's your podcast, man. I'm still joining you. We're just hanging out in the house here. It's awesome.
It's so great. Well, Matt, for our viewers who probably don't know who you are, it's probably a new market for what you do.
Sure.
Tell them a little bit about your journey and why we're talking today.
Yeah, so I'm the world's most accidental software founder. I was a fireman for, I guess, a little over 10 years. And I loved that job, man. Like, I was a fireman outside of Washington, D.C. in Arlington, Virginia, like where the Pentagon is and all that. And it was like the first thing I was ever good at, you know, as like a college dropout, this and that. And like, I found the fire department, like, all right, I got my thing. I'm never leaving. I was all in. And you know, in the fire department, the culture school is like, you know, brotherhood, and you always like help each other with whatever skills you have. The guys knew I was kind of like a closet nerd. You know, I learned how to code when I was in middle school. I was like learning HTML4 out of a book from like Barnes and Noble, you know, like back in the day. And so my buddy Jake, who worked with me in the firehouse, he opened a CrossFit gym and he was like, yo, nerd, can you make me a website? I'm like, yeah, whatever. So the one thing leads to another, to like never satisfied entrepreneurial friends. It goes from the website to now we're like figuring out how to do marketing for his business while he's at the firehouse for, you know, 70 hours a week. And this was like 2016. So marketing automation wasn't a thing. Like, text message marketing was brand new, you know? And long story short, like, we just started hacking on stuff and we became the world's most accidental software company, where we built it on other people's software. That wasn't good enough. And then I learned how to code on my days off, going to like this coding boot camp. And we just built this thing and we left the fire department in 2017 and went all in. So that was the first company.
That's amazing. And then so from there you had this software company and then you ended up being a coach as well.
Yeah. So we exited that company in 2020. And like, dude, so we served gyms. We exited January 28th, 2020, 5 weeks before COVID, roughly.
Perfect timing.
Yes. The luckiest thing that will ever happen to me. Everyone's always like, nice job. I'm like, no, it was idiotic, blind luck. I had no idea what was happening.
Totally.
So we exited that. I worked for the company that acquired us for like a year or so. And then, I was a member of this coaching company called SaaS Academy, run by Dan Martell, who's a mutual friend of ours. And that was like, Dan taught me how to be a software CEO. Like, I had no idea what I was doing, man. I spent, you know, basically 2 decades of my life learning how to squirt water at Red Stuff. You know, it had nothing to do with writing code and running a business. And, so Dan taught me a lot, obviously, and that was like the foundation for how we were able to be successful. And so I came back into that program first as a fractional coach after the exit, because I didn't really know what to do at that point.
Yeah.
Dan and I, we hacked around on a couple of ideas. And then eventually I joined SaaS Academy as their chief operating officer and an equity partner in 2022. And I was there up until we started Precision.
Yeah. The concept that I think about is, I think business is business. No matter who's listening to this, it doesn't matter what kind of business you run. If you're running a business, you have problems. Yeah. And I also think that most people have no idea what they're doing. What they do have is that ability to stick with it and figure things out.
Yeah, dude, 100%. I think there's like a couple of fallacies in business, right? I think number one is that, oh, the people who are bigger than me have it all figured out. Like, I've seen inside a lot of businesses, both large and small, and they are all as equally effed up as the others. Like, some of them have different problems. Some of them figure some stuff out and have new problems, but it's never right, which leads to fallacy number two, which is like, having a business that runs smoothly and perfectly is like this success metric that we should aspire to. I actually disagree with that, which is weird as a guy who's like the data nerd and the operator, but if you feel like everything in your business is running well, you are not setting aggressive enough goals. Like something in your business will be broken at all times. If you're growing, it's an immutable truth of growth. Like something is going to be wrecked or you're not growing.
No, that's 100% true. And what I want to focus on today is the idea of technology. So I think there's an interesting thing at the intersection of business and technology that a lot of people fail. They think that technology is going to be the holy grail that solves all their problems. Yeah. When in reality, it's not. I mean, think about if you have a garage, like think of all the stuff in your garage that you bought thinking it was going to solve a problem for you that you no longer use.
I feel seen right now. You right? See my workbench.
But like, I think people do that in their business.
Yeah.
I think it's a huge thing. I see it all the time. The latest and greatest thing, whatever it is, comes out. Think back to the people that you've coached or the businesses you've operated. Why do so many tech implementations fail?
Yeah, it's two guys who sell software for a living. This is a detrimental conversation to us.
It is.
But it's the truth. So I will tell you, there's one belief that I think people forget when they're purchasing software. Software doesn't solve your problems. Software is a tool for behavior change, and behavior change solves your problems. And so I think that especially in like mid-sized organizations and larger organizations, if you're not thinking through the software you're purchasing through the lens of what behaviors are going to change and what outcome is it going to provide inside of my company, those are really the two like non-negotiables. If you don't have an answer to that, then even though the software might be great, you might not be utilizing it the way it needs to be utilized. So I always think through everything I do as a behavior change mechanism and a creator of a specific outcome, ideally one that I can measure.
I don't know if you've seen this too, but what I find is a lot of times we will go in to do the deployment and people have done no pre-planning. Hmm. They haven't really thought through what this means as a change in their business. So what can a business leader think of before buying the software that would give them a better chance of success?
Yeah. So when you're purchasing a piece of software, you're doing it to get a certain result, right? And this seems basic, but I'm going to land it here in a second. So as either the founder of the business, if you're the one purchasing it, or, you know, if you're a VP in a company, whoever the main person is who's making the transaction, you've got to have a really clear opinion of, in the business, this is the number one metric that I'm trying to change by purchasing the software. And here's where I expect it to land in, you know, X number of months after the deployment. To say it differently, a software is a tool to let you complete an initiative faster and more effectively. Mm-hmm. The problem is that sometimes people buy the software without the initiative. They're like, oh, I need this thing. It sounds really good. The salesperson does a great job, whatever. And then they get the thing and they're like, shit, like this feels like work, man. Like I got to actually like do things. And it's tricky because this is like the existential tension is to software entrepreneurs that we live in is we build our software to lessen the blow of that. Like, I don't want it to feel like work. I want everything to feel instant and better. And I think in 2025 and with AI coming into software, like we can get closer, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, you still need a person with a plan who's trying to get an outcome. And the software is one of the tools that they're using to achieve it.
Well, and that's the other end of it, right? The software is only one thing. It's the people who actually have to use it. And yeah. You're changing their job. Like part of what we do, we are replacing part of the sales process. There's nothing more concerning to a salesperson than any disruption in what they're actually doing day to day. Now, we believe it's going to help them. The people are hiring our software because they think it's going to help them.
Yeah.
But that is a massive change. How do you get the people to come along on the ride? You just described the leaders have to have a plan and they should be driving a metric. It should be solving a problem. How do you get the people to come along for the ride?
There's one question that you have to answer if you want any human to do anything in any situation. What's in it for them? That is the way that I look through all of this. The place where software salespeople and software founders go wrong is they only think through the answer to that question from the eyes of the person who's giving them money and not of the eyes of the people that are actually using the software every day. Because I promise you, you might get the deal closed, but then if the users of the software who report to the person that bought the damn thing are pissed off that they're using it every day, I promise you, you will lose in year two. You will not get the renewal. Your churn will go up. Your net revenue retention will go down, and then you will feel sad. So the way that I look at this, and I'll give you a specific example of one of the ways I solved this in my first company, is you've got to think through like the incentives and the motivations of each of the types of people, meaning like, you know, you have sales reps using the software. You have probably sales manager or VPs. You have maybe CEOs.
Totally.
So let's say those are the three different types of people who are using it.
Personas. The users.
Right. It's probably a better way to say it than types of people. So
all good.
So yeah, the three personas. And so thinking through it, like what's in it for the founder, what's in it for the sales manager or the VP, what's in it for the individual rep. And then how can you get your software to reinforce those positive incentives based on the things that each of those people care about? But even when you do that, there's another level to this game, which is you also need to measure the satisfaction of each of those personas separately. So like we started doing this in Uplaunch, my first company. We noticed that we started to have a spike in churn. This was late in the game. We started to have a spike in churn, and you know, we do like churn analysis every month based on the exit interviews. And a lot of people are saying like, I love the software, but I can't get my team to use it. So it's not giving me the value. I said, cool. Well, like we like doing quarterly net promoter score, you know, how likely are you recommend 0 to 10 or 1 to 10. So we started breaking up the net promoter score and classifying it. We actually ran two scores, one for the purchasers of the software and one for the users, anyone who wasn't an admin. And we had been, dude, we had been patting ourselves on the fucking back. We were like, our NPS is as good as Apple's, you know, we're like, whatever. We were so happy. But the churn didn't match the NPS. So I knew there was a problem. When I split it out, the NPS of the people who were purchasing, it was great. It was like, you know, plus 70s and higher. And the NPS of the users was like zero.
Oh.
And I was like, huh, said to myself, self, I see a pattern here. Right. And then we realized that because we hadn't done a great job, we were working with very small businesses, like single owner, independent gyms.
Yep.
Right. It's not a lot of like organizational sophistication and training. It's just like not the right stage of business for that.
Yeah.
And so we're depending on these busy entrepreneurs to train their teams on how to use it and educate their teams on what's in it for them. Of course, it wasn't happening because they're running their 47th class of the day, sweeping the floor, unclogging the toilet, just trying to keep the business afloat. So we launched a webinar series specifically just for like Uplaunch fundamentals, teaching the non-purchasers, to the team members, how to get the best results out of the software to make their lives easier. You can imagine that our two NPS lines converged over a 6-month period because we started investing in the people who were wearing out the owners of these gyms to the point where they would cancel our software. Like it's just, it's different satisfaction metrics for different personas.
So what's one tech deployment that went wrong for you, either as an operator or that you saw in someone that you were coaching back in the day at SaaS Academy or even now in your current business?
100%. So there was one, I deployed sales commission calculation software.
We are in the middle of this right now.
Yeah.
We bought one a year ago, and I think it's going to get tossed out the window by the end of the week.
Same thing happened to us, and it's not their fault. It's ours. I pretty much broke every rule. And it's funny, like it's just hard to see the label from inside the bottle sometimes, right? I broke every rule. Like I was a COO, like the VP of sales should have been pushing that purchase to start with, not me. But I like needed it because I didn't like the way our commissions were being done. And it just was like all spreadsheet, manual, a lot of manual reconciliation. Like it was a finance
thing. There's got to be a better way, right?
Well, I mean, dude, we needed a better way. But the point was like I didn't approach it the way I articulated. Like I didn't have any good answer for what's in it for them. I was pretty much like, look, we just need this because like the amount of manual finance work we're doing right now is insane. And like this can't be the way for a company of our size. And so it was really tricky because I needed the buy-in of all the people inside of that team to like make it work. Mm. And the sales leader in that company was great. Like he was awesome. He's not one of these people who was like, oh, I hate everything new. Like those people exist. I don't like to work with them. Like he was a homie. Like it was all good. But it was just one of these things where it always felt like a side project. It was like this other thing. And it's like, if you balance that against generating revenue for the business, it will always lose unless there's a really good reason as to why it needs to be a priority.
Yep.
And so I didn't get it prioritized properly. I didn't get the buy-in of the people who needed to use it. And eventually we turned it off because it never got done. So like, even when you know the answers, sometimes you just have to take your own medicine sometimes and mess it up.
That jobs to be done idea of, you know, I hired this, I always think about it this way. We hire software to do a job
for us. I love that turn of phrase.
And when it doesn't do the job, you have to move on from the thing that you hired it for or find a different way to implement that thing, right? You can't just buy a CRM and expect magic.
CRMs are the worst.
It doesn't work that way.
CRMs and ERPs are the worst, right? Because all they are is an amplifier on human behavior. And so it's like, oh, I don't like keep track of my deals. Well, now here's a deal board. We're like, damn, now it's obvious I don't keep track of my deals. Why the hell do I want to pay money to use that thing? Like, I'd rather hide in private and just fail quietly.
I know you said this earlier, but that metric around the success or failure of the deployment. And then you also mentioned the different personas within there.
Yeah.
As you look at the successful tech implementations, either internally or from some of the coaching clients that you've had, what are some of those metrics? that have been really helpful, whether it's for your software, just in general, that people can think about?
Yeah, it depends on the software. And so like to use your turn of phrase for like hiring a software to do a job, the same way you hire a person to do a job, that person in their role is going to have success metrics. So it's not a question that has like a blanket answer, but like give you an example. We'll go back to the sales commission software example, right? So if I were thinking through this, there were probably two that would have mattered. It would be the number of like person hours it took to get the month closed from the finance side. That's like the finance metric. And then from the sales side, it would probably be some type of accuracy metric on like the number of times that finance had to kick back commission reports because they weren't right. And so like you can tell by the fact that I had to think about that to answer your question that I didn't have that answer when we rolled out the software. Cause I just like, I knew it was a need and I wasn't wrong. It was a need, but I just didn't do the work.
I mean, the number of times that we've heard from customers who say they're going to leave our platform, it's part of business. We understand it. It just doesn't feel right. That sits terribly with me because we didn't do a good job. We didn't do a good job of articulating the value we're going to provide to them.
Yeah.
And there was no real tracking metric to say we raised our close rate or we raised our average deal size or whatever that thing is. And without nailing that, you're doomed for failure.
Yeah. There's a really good, I'll give you an example of someone who does this really well, but there's a principle that I think is important to lay out here. The further you get from revenue, the harder your life is as a software founder, right? So like sales commission software, like that's a couple of steps removed away from generating revenue for a business. Like it's a pretty circuitous path, right? You've got like person hours, effective hourly rate of the finance team. Maybe you're saving a little bit of money there. Like it's kind of a tough sell.
Yeah.
Right. At the end of the day, if you're selling software to other businesses, you are a money salesman. That is it. Like there, it's a verbal contract of saying when you'd strip away all the BS, your business will make more money because you spent some with me.
That's right.
That's what we do. So the further away you get from that, the tougher it is. And so like, I'll give you an example. So, there was a company they've since been acquired, but they were called Baremetrics. They were like a Stripe analytics tool for like small tech companies, right? So they'd plug in and it would show me my churn rate and my growth rate and all that kind of stuff. Excuse me. But they had its add-on service for like failed payment recovery, right? And it was a lot more expensive, but it was as a percentage of revenue that they recover for you. So number one, you're paying for an outcome. Cool. Totally. But every time you logged in to the dashboard, they would say, we have recovered this much monthly recurring revenue for you and you have spent this much to recover it. So, and I can look at it and I log in and like, we've made you $500,000 and you've spent 32 grand, never churning. Like
if I could never giving that software
if
away.
I could give you 500 grand right now, but you had to give me 32 grand, you'd go find $32,000 and hand it to me before this day was over.
That's right.
Like it's a fair value exchange. It was very tight proximity to money. They were a money salesman, right? They were selling me money. So I think that thinking through that as a product person, like, what is my fastest, most easily understood path to demonstrating to my customers and users how they are earning money because of the money they're spending with me? The better of an answer you have to that question, the lower your churn rate's going to be.
Yeah. And I think if you look at it from the business owner's perspective who's buying the technology, if you don't have those metrics, this is the bottom line. If you don't have those metrics to track the spend that you have, how can you justify the spend?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't have that dashboard, I mean, you might not have something as clear as I spent 32 to make 500, although we would love those metrics in every way. There has to be something that ties it to success.
Yeah. And dude, and there's a lot of ways that are like one of my worst qualities as a business person is I strive for perfection. And like, I imagine them like on the stand getting like, you know, cross examined about like why I said something. It's like, you can't handle the truth. You know? But one of the ways that you can do this, if you're not like a software that's tied into the workflow of making money, is you can at least like during your onboarding, get some approximations of what a deal is worth and try to like back into it. So like an example of this, like we knew when I was selling software to gyms that their average CrossFit gym membership was about $150 a month at the time. So I could at least, and I never put this in the dashboard, but we used it a lot when we were doing customer conversations. I at least knew that we were a $300 a month software. So once I get you two memberships, I know that you're no longer spending money on us. And once I get you, you know, another 10 memberships, you've made enough money where we're pretty solid. So I just like remind you of that. And we started doing this in emails, like, you know, customer, like monthly update emails on how their account was doing. Mm-hmm. And so the point is like, we weren't doing payment processing. I had no idea if they were selling memberships for $30 or $300. There are gyms that do all of those things. Mm-hmm. But I knew that on average, and I just said it, like on average, like the average gym of, you know, average Upline gym sells memberships for $150 a month. At that rate, you've made, you know, 12X your investment this month. And even just abstracting like that, the perfectionist in me is raging, like, don't say that on a podcast, you know, because like, of course I'm only plugged into the money, but we weren't plugged into the money. So I had to have some type of proxy method to show them the fact that they were getting money when they spent money with me.
And the bottom line for a business owner is if all the things that you're spending money on in your business are not tied to the money, you might want to think about that.
Yeah. You're probably not making a lot.
That's right. it. So how should leaders think about scaling or replacing technology in their business in order to target growth of the business?
Yeah. The same way you think about scaling or replacing people in order to target growth of the business. It's all of these things. Like if you treat software like people, it becomes very, very clear. So when you think about replacing a person, and then we'll link it back to software, right? There is the cost of recruiting, cost of purchasing software, right? There's the cost of training a person. That's your onboarding and implementation period. Then there's like the projected upside of like, do I think this person is smarter and more capable than the person that they're replacing, right? That's like the value prop of software B versus software A. And then how much runway do I think this person has before the rollout grows them? Same thing with software. So it's all the same. So I think through it the same way I think through any decision, like anything you do in business, whether it's a person or a software purchase or pretty much anything else, one of the immutable truths is that it's going to get worse before it gets better, right? Like if you hire me into your business, I will be a value detractor long before I add anything to Engage, because you're going to have to teach me. I'm going to show up. I'm not going to know how to check my freaking email. I'm not going to know where anything is. Where are the SOPs? Who's Jimmy? Like, how does this work? Why is this this way? I'm just going to be like this annoying little parrot on your shoulder. Dean, you know what I mean? Like asking freaking questions. And so I will be a drag on your business before I ramp out of being a drag and actually contribute value. So the real question is, how deep of a drag is the person or software going to be? How long are they going to be a drag? What can you do to compress the timeline of the drag? And then what is the asymmetric upside once they're up and running? That's why I look through any decision. I just assume that it's going to take me backwards before it takes me forwards. And I need to compress the timeline of going backwards and maximize the distance going forwards.
I love that. So I'm going to give you three questions that I didn't tell you before we sat down. Just like quick lightning round questions at the end here. What's one common mistake you still see with your existing customers?
The mistake they're making in their business?
In their mistake. So let me rephrase. Okay. What's the common mistake in tech implementations that you see in your current customer base?
Believing that set it and forget it is actually real.
Got it. What's one action every owner of a business should take today in order to secure their good future with software?
Anything new, look at it daily until you're confident that it's working properly.
And what's your favorite tech tool right now?
Wow. My favorite tech tool right now, honestly, Claude Code.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now as a nerd, and by the way, you said nerd earlier. Yeah. My friends used to call me a nerd because I was always in the tech side of everything. And I would always just say, thank you.
Yeah.
It's not a negative thing to me.
No.
It is an absolute term of endearment. And when they had problems with their computer or their phone or something, it's amazing how my phone would ring.
Yeah, that's it, man. I'm pretty sure that like jack nerds run the world. If you can go work out and go be a nerd at the same time, you got to figure it out. You'd be okay.
Matt, thank you so much for having me here at Precision HQ. Dude,
happy to.
Where can people, I think anyone listening to this podcast through our Engage network doesn't know you. Where can we find you?
Yeah. So if you're on social media, just hit me on Instagram at Matt Verlack. I post at least two videos a day there. I'm there all the time. If you want to learn about precision and fix your data so it actually works for you, precision.co, or just find me on Instagram and DM me. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on all the rest of the places, but Instagram or the website is the best place to find me.
Awesome. I'll spare the audience our origin story, but it still sits in my brain today of the day that we met. And this conversation is just an extension of that. So
that's
thanks
it,
so much.
Thanks, Dean.
You bet.